James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Just trying to answer a question. Somebody asked me if I knew all the voices in the opening of the show there. I know one of them is Gene Wilder. I'm trying to some of these days I'll tell you. I'm scatterbrained right now. trying to get back at it after what was a ridiculous day yesterday. The studio here is on a street, a road, whatever you want to call it. Officially it's a road. And there's a curve out front. And now and then, when it gets slippery or dark or whatever, somebody comes whipping around this curve, runs their car into the pole on the curve. They run off the road, run into the pole. That's where the cable box is for many, many, many subscribers. And so they did that yesterday. And, of course, the company finds out about it and snapped a pole, the whole business. And I was just telling somebody it looks totally ridiculous right now because they took some of those big nylon straps, like Ray was talking about on the chat room, like they use for handcuffs, only great big long ones, and strapped that baby back to the pole, what's left of it. A real first-class fix. I hope they're planning on getting it going here again soon. Let me see here. Where do you start on a day like today? There is so much going on. I noticed the stock market is jumping up and down like a yo-yo. Currently, it's down 152 points, the latest one there. And, of course, the Congress. My. Poor babies. John Boehner. I like to call him Boehner. Called all of his compadres, all the Republicans, to walk out because they didn't think it was the right thing to do to vote on a contempt of Congress for Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton. No, they didn't think it was very nice. So he had them all walk out. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little while. So I don't know if they're all back in now or what. A whole lot happening out there. We've got a great guest this afternoon coming up in the second hour. We've got Democratic Representative Adam Smith, U.S. Representative Adam Smith from Washington, and the reason we're having him on is he chairs the Terrorism Subcommittee on the Armed Services Committee. Going to have him on to talk about Iraq and how great things are going there right now. So we'll have him coming up in the second hour. Again, that's Representative Adam Smith of Washington. And he is the chair of the Terrorism Subcommittee on the Armed Services Committee. And we'll have him on by and by. Much going on today. As I said, we have this little walkout, this little snit pulled off. That's what my mother would have called a little snit. And by the way, it's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone. All you sentimental folks and all you folks that believe in love. And I do. Happy Valentine's Day to one and all. To everybody I love. Happy Valentine's Day. And I hope you're all having a good day. I hope you all got candy and roses and all those sorts of things. Going out to dinner tonight and all those things. We had, and by the way, they're letting me know right now that there was one Democrat that voted against the contempt citation, and that was Henry Cuellar from Texas. Okay. One. The way things are going, I'm surprised they passed it. I really am, the way things are going. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the program today. We'd love to have you join the program today. Plan on talking about Henry Waxman a little bit today. I know you'll want to talk about that. And, of course, this immunity deal that's still the topic of conversation. You know, I've got an idea. Let's give them all immunity while we're at it. I'm still really pissed about that whole thing. And Harry Reid and don't get me started on Harry Reid, but you know, I've got an idea. Let's just give them all immunity. Let's give all the telecoms immunity to eavesdrop on every one of our conversations and emails. They've got that. And after all, you know the old story, and you know what you hear from every damn Republican you mention that to about how your rights are going to be violated, about how this is just letting them get their foot in the door to spy on you. The cameras are setting up all over the place, and you'll be spied upon. You know this is coming. You know the Big Brother Society is coming. You know it is, and this is just a harbinger of things to come. And you know the old Republican story. If you got nothing to hide, you know how that goes. If you got nothing to hide, why would you worry if somebody listened to your conversation? I'll tell you what. If you don't have anything to hide, let me listen to all your conversations. Next time you got a little secret thing going, let me listen. If you don't have anything to hide. You know, if you're having a little conversation with your sweetheart on the phone, if you're having a little intimate email going back and forth, let me see it. You don't have anything to hide. Give all the corporations blanket immunity. Give them all. You know, let's give the tobacco companies. Let them kill every citizen in the country if they want to. They were getting away with it for quite a while anyway. Why not let them continue on? Let's do away with all those laws, and let's let them do what the hell they want to. Let's let all the corporations do what they want to. Why do we pick on the poor old drug dealers that sell cocaine and marijuana and such? Let them operate freely just like the cigarette companies do. Some of my favorites, the chemical companies. Let them dump all their poison in the rivers and the stream. Why should we pick on them? Give them immunity. Let them kill half the population. What the hell? Oh, it just gripes me. It just does. What is it when you've got an R behind your name, you're just automatically in favor of helping out all the corporations and letting just... You know damn well if this was a Democratic administration right now trying to do all this spying on our citizens crap, you know they would be going nuts. If it was the Democrats trying to favor all the big corporate, they'd be going crazy. Not that we don't have enough of that within the party anyway, because we do. Let's take all the pollution stuff off all the smokestacks of industry, too, while we're... Give them immunity from prosecution. Let them poison the whole damn country. All the stuff's getting in the way of profit anyway. Let's don't get in the way of profit. Shouldn't do anything about doctors who practice bad medicine either. No. Let them amputate the wrong arm or treat people for the wrong disease. Hell, so what if a few of them died? Docs only try to make a buck. Let's have immunity for everybody. Let's have immunity for radio hosts, no matter what they do. Spying, polluting, malpractice, poisoning people, what's the difference? Let's just have immunity for everybody. It is. Well, and don't forget, most of all, let's give George Bush immunity. Him and Cheney and Rove and Rumsfeld and the whole damn evil bunch of them. Why should they be held accountable for a few little itty-bitty lies to the American public. Must let them off the hook with the telecoms, too. They should pass something, immunity forever and ever for everybody leaving this administration. Makes sense to me. Makes just as much sense as the immunity for the telecoms. So what if we broke the law? So what? What does a law mean nowadays to this Republican administration? It means nothing. Absolutely nothing. Drives me crazy. You know, I'm so much of a cynic nowadays. Well, don't get me started on Harry Reid right now. Don't get me started on Harry Reid. I think that deal was a done deal all along on the immunity. I think it was done. From the very big get-go, it was a done deal. And, of course, the Democrats did up and, you know, did their little bit of cursory, oh, I don't know, I don't know. We're not going to cave. We had Senator Dodd get up and give an impassioned speech, and what happened? They caved. They caved. And now Nancy Pelosi says the House is not going to cave no matter what. Well, we'll see. We will see. Any bets? Any bets on whether or not Nancy and the House caves on this? They already won't let them have the extension. It's good for a year. I don't know what the emergency is. Emergency is Bush wants to have it his way, and Republicans want to give it to him his way. I'd like to give it to him his way. 866-546-5254. But isn't it interesting that the little pissant Republican congressman had to walk out of the House today because they didn't go along with the contempt of Congress citation? I think it's the first one in over 20 years. I think maybe 25 years. I think it's the first one that's come to a vote in 25 years. I'm pretty sure I heard that earlier today. And they don't like it because it's one of their own. How very interesting that the Republicans staged this emotional meltdown over contempt citations for Harriet Myers and Josh Bolton. It would be different if there were any kind of meaningful question about whether Myers and Bolton and the Bush administration gave the law the finger on this deal. Both of them refused to answer subpoenas. And they refused to answer the subpoenas by citing privileges that don't exist. You get picked up for speeding and you cite someone, no, officer, you can't give me a ticket because of the non-speeding act of 1982. Whatever. I'd love to cite radio show host privileges if the need should arise. I can't, though. And unless Harriet Myers and Bolton got some sort of super status that I'm not aware of, why they can't either. And, of course, both of them are innocent. Or so says George Bush. And who can argue with George Bush on the law? George Bush is the law. Ask him. Isn't it funny that this party of personal responsibility, when anything ever happens when they need to be held accountable, when anything happens when they get pushed into a corner on the law, when their people get caught breaking the law, they run and hide. Personal responsibility, my behind. How many of you watched TV yesterday? I did. Monday's a day, not Monday, but anyway, I watched a little bit of that yesterday, that Waxman hearing, another Waxman hearing. Don't ask me why, but I did watch it. One concerning steroids and baseball and all that. Now, I'm not a professional baseball fan anymore. God, I used to be. And I really haven't been a fan, and it broke my baseball heart when I learned that Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa were shooting up so they could break the Babe Ruth home run record. That did it for me. It finished it for me, I should say. Actually, I lost a lot of interest in professional baseball way back when George Steinbrenner and Ted Turner started bidding up the price of players after the Curd Flood deal. Some of you may not know what that is, but I'm not going to go into it now. But it just changed the face of professional baseball. Not that I didn't agree with free agency, but I didn't agree with guys like Steinbrenner and Ted Turner and some of the other rich ones now just buying themselves a team instead of developing one over the years, doing it the old-fashioned way. And like so many of my friends and just about all the guys that I grew up with, loved baseball. Loved it. Played it every day myself when the weather permitted. I mean every day. Even when it got cold in Ohio in March, we'd be out playing baseball. I remember playing baseball in weather so cold it'd sting your hands so bad when you'd swing the bat and hit the ball when it was so cold. I was really one of those little kids that you saw that had the ball gloves strung through my belt so I could play catch at the drop of a hat in the summer. Played Little League, Pony League, and high school. Had a mean fastball, and I swung a pretty good bat, if I do say so myself. But anyway, back then, you knew who your team was going to be every year. You knew who would be on the team from year to year because it was the same group of guys with only maybe a couple of new names every year. And Steinbrenner and Turner really did ruin all that. And anyway, my point was, it was really sad watching those hearings yesterday. Roger Clemens, one of the greatest pitchers of all time, stands accused of cheating. And I don't know if he did it or not. But really, except for the kids who would be let down, I don't really care anymore about professional baseball. What bothered me most of all about watching this whole thing is that Henry Waxman decided to have another one of his meaningless circuses. And as you know, if you've listened to this show for a long time, I was long a Henry Waxman fan. And maybe I'm not being fair to him by saying this, but enough is enough, Henry. I'm sorry, but you've not accomplished a damn thing with your endless series of hearings. And I thought the hearings would be a good idea. I really did. When the Dems took control of the Congress, I thought, here we go. We're going to have some hearings. We're going to get to the bottom of a bunch of things. When they took over the House, there's a whole lot of us that thought, okay, the fur's going to fly now. Henry's going to get to the bottom of things along with John Conyers. Well, they've... Both of them. They've huffed and they've puffed and they've completely fizzled out. As they say in Texas, the popular phrase, they were all hat and no cattle. And some would say they were farts in a windstorm. That's popular colloquialism where I'm from. And other than bluster, other than threats of subpoenas and legal action, yada, 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 what have they accomplished? Really, what have they done to slow down Baby Bush even a little bit? Anything? Have they stopped him from breaking the law? Have they done anything at all about his nearly nonstop lawlessness since they've taken over? Anything? I'm asking, and if you've got an idea, let me know. But I don't know of anything they've accomplished. Harriet Myers, Gonzalez, practically the entire Justice Department. Who else? Roe, Cheney, the war, the budget. Name it. What have these guys done? Torture, the CIA tapes, the immunity telecoms, the missing emails, all of that stuff. Threats and more empty threats. Oh, we're going to get you. They're not worthy of being in the United States Congress, and I can't say a whole hell of a lot of good about the Senate either after the debacle on the immunity issue with the telecoms. And it makes me wonder, what's going on here? Where does the will of the people enter into the actions of the United States Congress these days? Does the will of the people matter at all? I just am shocked over it. I really am. I don't know what else to say. The day after they roll over and give the administration exactly what they wanted, here we have our Congress coming out and putting on a show for us, especially that clown Dan Burton. Clown is not a strong enough word for him. It's a joke. All the important things they could be doing, and here they are having their fun with baseball players. Baseball players, for God's sake. Entertainers. That's what they are. They're entertainers. High-paid, overpaid, high-priced, prima donna entertainers. And that's what Henry Waxman is holding hearings over. Give me a break. This is just a sick joke. Nah. I really, it sickened me watching the whole thing. It really did. And I know I've heard from a lot of you in the last couple of days about it as well. And I know you're not any happier about it than I am. But there we go. That's our United States Congress at work. Well, we're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll play a tune for certain people. On this Valentine's Day.
No other love can warm my heart now that I've known the comfort of your arms. No other love, oh, the sweet contentment that I find.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking.
Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Ah, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shear's Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here on the Horn Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
Welcome back to the show. You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Had some notes here about radio. Talkers Magazine. Talkers Magazine, which is kind of the Bible of talk radio, of regular terrestrial radio anyway. They have out their new, what they call their Heavy 100. And in that, there are some things that may surprise you. I'm trying to look for this list right now. Where's it at? Here we go. Anyway, there's no doubt who's number one. Not in my mind, but in many people's opinion. And I'll have to admit, the most listened to radio show in America is Mr. Drug Junkie Limbaugh. Some people would have been in prison, have a prison record right now if they'd done some of the things he's done. But nonetheless, he's number one and making $35 to $37 million a year, I see. Sean Hannity, hateful bastard that he is number two on the list. And here's the one that really took me. This is not necessarily in listeners, numbers of listeners, but it's All Things Considered, says Talkers Magazine. Michael Savage, number three. Michael Savage. If that doesn't give you a commentary on society here in America right now, I don't know what does. Okay, Limbaugh, he's bombastic, knows his craft, Hannity as well. I don't agree with a single damn thing either one of them have to say on anything. But Michael Savage, number three on the list of talk radio listeners. And some of the odd things in the new list, see Mr. Ed Schultz dropped from eighth down to fifth. They're losing affiliates. And Randy Rhodes fell to 40th from 13th. And our friend Mike Malloy dropped out of the, what they call the Heavy 100 altogether. Interesting. Randy Rhodes fell to 40th from 13th. I'm sure she's really happy about that. But the surprising thing about that is Michael Savage. My God. Dr. Laura Schlesinger, she's not on in this market at all. And see, she's fourth. Glenn Beck is fifth. Oh, God. Laura Ingram, sixth. Don Imus. You see, if you're famous enough, nothing you can do is... We'll get you in a whole lot of trouble. I'm a seventh, Schultz eighth, Mike Gallagher number nine, and Neil Bortz number 10. So, O'Reilly's 11. I'm sure that doesn't make him very happy. Interesting commentary, anyway, on talk radio these days. Thought you might enjoy hearing what's happening there. And also a little story I picked up... from Utah yesterday. I don't know how many of you have seen this. A West Jordan, Utah state senator has apologized for comments he made during debate over a bill yesterday, and some of his colleagues perceived it as racist. Republican Senator Chris Butters, that's not the Butters from South Park now, after making a statement like this, it might be. Senator Chris Butters compared Senate Bill 48, which addresses equalizing school construction funds. He compared that to a black baby, calling it a dark, ugly thing. Now, the great part about this story is Butters came back and said he didn't intend for his comments to be interpreted as racist. He compares a Senate bill to a black baby, saying it's dark and ugly, but he didn't mean it in a racist way. He said, following the comment on the Senate floor, Republican Senator John Valentine of Orem called it a breach in decorum. Other legislators say there was a discussion about censoring Butters immediately afterwards, but no action was taken. Well, it is Utah, you know. My. Hard to imagine they didn't censure those comments. But like I said, it is Utah. And also, we look for heroes every now and then. We look for people who have the strength of character to stand up for what they believe. Well, here's a lady who most definitely fits the bill right there. A lady named Betty Hall. She's a 14-term state of New Hampshire representative who has introduced to the State House H.R. 24 to impeach Bush and Cheney. The public hearing for the resolution is next Tuesday, February the 19th, the day after President's Day. She's 87 years old, and she refuses to eat again until Conyers begins impeachment proceedings. She said, "I've had a good life. I can't think of a better way to end it." Lady that interviewed her here says, "I know Betty, and when she decides to do something, there's no changing her mind. She's going to do it. She will not eat until impeachment proceedings begin in earnest. We owe it to her to make this worth her while. It's time to pull out all the stops and get Conyers' ass into gear. We cannot let this clear-headed, heroic woman sacrifice herself." Again, that's Betty Hall, 14-term state of New Hampshire representative, 87 years old. God bless her. Must be quite a lady. 866-546-5254. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
How you doing?
Good.
I wanted to just say something about that song you just played a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard that in years.
Well, it's a very old song.
And I was trying to place a singer because I always heard it Joe Stafford, but that didn't sound like
that. That is Joe Stafford.
It was?
Yes.
Wow, boy, times have changed. Isn't it funny how your sense of hearing...
Well, you know, it's a remix of a very old record, and so maybe, you know, maybe she sounds a little better than Joe used to. I don't know, but that...
Not really, but the song is wonderful. I think it's a wonderful song. I want to show Pan's Polonaise or something.
Yes, it's from a classical piece.
Yeah.
But I love that song myself. It means a lot to me.
Yeah. It's not very well known, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. That's a pet...
That's one song I know all the words.
It's a pet peeve of mine, because I think some of our youngsters, and here I go sounding old, but I think some of our youngsters are missing out on some very wonderful music.
For sure, uh-huh. Remember when they had the Unchained Melody in that movie, and it became so popular, and they didn't realize it was an old song.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Many like
so
that.
So that's what they need to do, is to put some of these old songs in the movies, because that one is a beautiful, beautiful song.
Well, it was Valentine's Day, you know, and I thought, well...
it was good to hear it again.
Yeah, we've got a couple more Valentine's Day songs tucked
away. Oh, that's
away.
Right. Okay. I'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, I was watching a little bit of the Congress, and, you know, the Republicans walked out.
Mm-hmm. Are they back yet?
Well, they must be, because one of the guys from Cuba, he's up there, he's real upset about being called away from Lantos Memorial to the Congress, and he's really mad at Nancy Pelosi for doing that. So he's up and pouting about that.
Oh. Well, geez. I tell you.
And, of course, I heard my congressman, Putnam.
Yes. Oh, one of the very finest, Adam.
When they walked out, yeah, that's what I got, huh? I tell you. When they walked out, he was, and I saw part of their news conference he was speaking. I thought I might call his office and say, are you going to support that deal?
Oh, yeah. You ought to call him. I can't stand him.
He's another one of those like Catherine Harris. They come from a very well-to-do background, you know. They made money off the backs of the migrant workers, and including my parents.
and they'll follow the party line no matter what. Right or wrong, yeah. Doesn't make any difference. They'll follow it.
The first time he ran for Congress, I still got it somewhere. He just ran on family values.
Oh.
We had another older guy running as a Democrat, and I thought he might have been really good, but no, they voted for Putnam. And then the second time, we had an openly gay gentleman who I had known. He was really smart, really nice, and he had a partner, and he was very open about it. And of course, they tried to destroy him, you know.
Oh, sure. Well, now that we found out,
nobody ran against him.
Now that we found out that they don't have any family values over there on that side anymore, I wonder what they'll run on this time.
Back to the war.
More war.
Yeah,
you're right.
More war. Whoopie doopie.
You're not hearing that family values thing anymore. they've dropped that. There've just been a few little incidents happening.
Well, you know, Guy, what shall we tell our children? Isn't that what they always said about Clinton? What can we tell our children?
Yeah, that's right. Well, if they think the kids got an education when Clinton was in, they've got their degrees and things they ought not to know. I don't know by now. They haven't been a very good example, I must say.
No. Okay. Well, I just thought I'd call and say, look, did you have a pole knocked down near your place?
I've been through that before. They come around the curve and smack the pole and knock the cable down and all that kind of thing. And so I mentioned to everybody earlier today that they've literally tied it back to the pole with some nylon straps. So
you're kidding?
Yeah. so if I sound a bit shaky to everybody today, you'll know why.
And I got through it this time.
Yeah.
Well, y'all had some really bad weather down there, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We've had some ugly weather here in Florida
the past
few days, but I think we're over it now, finally.
Oh, it's beautiful outside. It was real cold this morning, but it's very beautiful outside now.
Good.
So that's a Florida winter for you.
Well, I've got a little story about Florida coming up. I'll do it right after we're done talking, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Well, you take care.
Thank you, Juanita.
Bye-bye.
Yes. I hate to be the one to bring this up. You know I do. But they're all lamenting the fact over in the Republican side that they do wish that Jeb Bush could have been their candidate this year. Because they love George Bush. You know, he's such a popular governor in Florida. And they loved him. Just loved him. Well, let me read you a short statement here. It's from a gentleman named James Crosby. It says, Governor Jeb Bush, this is from just a few years ago, I think, five years ago. Governor Jeb Bush has appointed me Secretary of the Department of Corrections. I'm both honored and excited. The stewardship of our department offers great challenges and opportunity, and I intend to begin work immediately. There are two tasks that must be addressed forthwith. This is the new Department of Corrections head that Jeb Bush appointed back in 2003. And, of course, he wants the appropriate operation of his agency, and they're going to be diligent in their work, and he goes on, yada, yada, yada. Just telling everybody how dedicated and hardworking and loyal and all that he's going to be. Going to provide leadership for the agency. Well, this gentleman is such a good example. And if you think this is bad, you ought to check out the Children's Services Department here in Florida. Jeb Bush appointees as well. But if you think Jeb Bush has good judgment and all, he appointed this man to head his Department of Corrections. Here's a new story. Softball drunken orgies, and a prison system run like the mafia. That's what Florida's former prison secretary says he inherited when he took over one of the nation's largest prison systems 2 years ago. Mr. McDonough, who replaced Crosby. They show a picture of the house built on prison grounds where the prison officials held orgies. McDonough, when he took over for Crosby, the Jeb Bush appointee, said on his first day in the job, and he walked into the house, there was crime scene tape preventing anyone from entering. He said that was an indication we had a problem in the department. He just retired last week, this gentleman did, that took over for Crosby. And he revealed a startling list of alleged abuses and crimes going on inside of Florida's prison. Top prison officials admitting to kickbacks, guards importing and selling steroids in an effort to give them an edge on the softball field. Taxpayer funds to pay for booze and women at their orgies at the department head's house. Guards who punished other guards who threatened to report him. He said corruption had gone to an extreme, and he said it all began at the top. They seemed to be drunk half the time and had orgies the other half when they weren't taking money and beating each other up. Now, this is the Department of Corrections guy that took over for the Jeb Bush appointee. He added women were treated like chattel in this department. He described bizarre prison culture among those that ran the system, one that he says seemed obsessed with interdepartment softball games and the orgies after the game. He went on to say, I cannot explain how big an obsession softball had become. People were promoted on the spot after a softball game at the drunken party to high positions in the department because they were able to hit a softball out of the park a couple of times. The connection between the softball and the parties and the corruptions and the beatings was greatly intertwined. The parties and orgies were often carried out at a waterfront ranch house built on prison grounds for a former warden with taxpayer dollars, McDonough said. The house was complete with bar, pool table, and hot tub. Well, McDonough, the guy that just retired who took over for this mess, he's a former Army colonel, commanded troops in Vietnam and Africa, and he was Florida's drug czar before taking on the job of the head of Florida prison. 90,000 inmates here, by the way. So anyway, he's trying to get it all back on the up and up again. 28,000 prison system employees in the state of Florida. Man, that seems like a lot. He said they were acting like frat boys out of control. Well, he demoted 280 people. He fired 90 top prison officials, wardens, supervisors, colonels, and majors, claiming they were corrupt or not to be trusted. Criminal child charges were filed against more than 40 others, and most were convicted. And in addition to the orgies and other misconduct outside the cell blocks, there were other allegations of prisoners being harmed. Wow. Quite a story. So, for the beloved Jeb Bush, there you go. There's another example of another one of his great appointees, Mr. Crosby, that was running the prison system here in Florida. How'd you like to be the new president of the United States? You think you're qualified? You're just as qualified as Junior Bush is. I'll tell you that much right now. That much I know. I don't even know you, and I know you're as qualified as he is. Oh, hey, before I get started on another story here, let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Sandra from California.
Hi, welcome.
Did you hear that Bush is threatening to postpone his trip if they don't you know, pass this FISA right away?
Yes, he's had this trip planned for such a long time, and he'll have to postpone it now. What a tragedy.
Well, no, but, I mean, listen, am I missing something? What is the urgency? Apparently, this extension is good for a year.
Yeah.
And the tantrums that he's throwing, along with his the brown shirts that walked out, and you tell me if I saw something really weird. Was that Nancy Pelosi saying, "Tough titty, I'm not going to vote on it"? Was she standing up?
Did she say that?
Well, I mean, it looked like she had a backbone there for a minute. I don't want to be confused. I just want to know if I saw what I saw.
I saw Boehner get up and give his little speech, and when he was whining about the president having to put off his trip to Africa that's been planned for so long, and then he said, "Nah, we're not going to stand for this, and we're not going to vote for it, and we're all going to leave," and they got up and walked out. That's all I saw on C-SPAN.
No, because, see, if they don't do anything, that Protect America Act, that, you know, Orwellian nightmare will just die, and we'll be left with just the regular FISA, which gives him all the power that he needs. I mean, I would like to think that these Democrats are going to, because this is the last firewall between the end of the Fourth Amendment or whatever is coming up with these people, but it's not nice.
Well, let's take bets. Will they cave or will they not? I say they will.
Well, I always say they will, too, but, I just think that I'm kind of confused about, I mean, what's really going on? Why is Bush, having a fit about this? You know, what is the big secret? Is it because they're really breaking the law, like severely or something?
Well, the immunity, that's what it was to get that through. I mean, they've got that handled. But they've got to get the immunity. They don't have it completely passed yet. They're going to have to get in and hash out an agreement between the House and the Senate. It's a power play.
Okay, because, I thought that the way the Congress works is that you have to reconcile two bills in conference. Isn't that how Congress
yes.
works normally?
Yes, okay, and they're going to have to take it to conference, and the Republicans don't want to. And
Well, what, they want them to just say yes to the Senate bill and completely upend
mm-hmm.
the procedure and just
sure.
bring it to Bush?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I heard Steny Hoyer say that's not going to happen. He said it's going to go to conference, and that's the way it's going to be. We shall see.
Okay, because I also heard him, too. You know, I don't mean to be sarcastic, but I'm in a state of shock because it looks like they're trying to make it work the way it's been working for the last 220 years. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
I hate to be that way, but I'm so sick to death.
How else can you be today,
Of Pelosi, all of them, they make me sick. I mean, really, I am sick to death of these people. They're all cowards. This man has 24%. He's disgusting. I hate to even look at his face. You see what I'm saying?
Oh,
I'm at that point.
Absolutely.
I can't listen to him talk. I can't even say what, because I don't want to be bothered by the CIA, but you know what I'm feeling, right?
Sure, sure.
I'm just so over it. I'm tired of the Democrats. I don't know if they're all, like, Republican lights, if it's a big conspiracy against we the people, but, man.
Well, when we had all those senators the other day vote against the immunity.
Yeah.
What does that tell you? Well, I think it said a couple of things. I think it said, number one, there are a few of them that are in Republican areas, and they're worried about keeping their butts in their seats in the Senate. Okay. I don't like that, but at least I understand their motives. But there are some of them that voted for it who are not in areas where they're threatened by reelection, and to me that tells me they're just bad people.
Yeah, like my Senator Feinstein. I don't know what's wrong with her.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, because I'm from California, I just have a quick memory of her when Moscone, I don't know if you know about this.
Oh, sure.
In San Francisco, she was real suspect back then. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought of her as being well suspect. Her husband's a war profiteer. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
She's wrong.
Yeah.
And I just am sort of sick to death of her. And Harry Reid, He's another one that was starting to make me physically ill up in here, guy. Physically ill. Because he don't do nothing.
Well, I think it's come to the point where Harry needs to go, and I think it ought to be one of the first acts of the new Democratic Congress after they go into session next year rid of him.
I know, but I would feel, you know, I would forgive a lot of things if for some reason they was able to hold on and keep this FISA thing at bay. You see what I'm saying? I'm hopeful, and I'll keep following it because this is just, you know, the dams will break. If they give these corporations immunity on this, it ain't never going to stop with these corporations. Then they'll just be, it's not going to, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's not just privacy now. These corporations will use this immunity to prey on the American people even more so. I'm sorry. That's what I believe.
It's a foot in the door. It absolutely is. It'll come to no good. We all know that. And we all know they'll cave, and I think it's a done deal. I don't think they will hold it off. I don't think most of them want to hold it off.
And if that's the case, I just think, you know, we're in for some sad days, because if they have the immunity to just spy at will on us, they're not going to just do it for the government. They're going to do it for their own purposes. You know what I mean?
Positively. That's exactly the way it'll go, Sandra. Exactly the way it'll go.
You know, and I am concerned about my civil liberties, but I'm also concerned about being poisoned, murdered, and whatever by these corporations, and we have no recourse because they've confused these idiots out there to think that the courts aren't for you when it's the last place for a person in a democracy to achieve any sort of justice, you know?
It has been so, and it will change. And if we let them keep getting away with more, people don't understand. I mean, it's a drip, drip, drip thing. It's just going to keep going.
They really don't understand because, you know, just because you have a post box in Delaware doesn't make you loyal to the United States. You understand what I'm saying?
No.
These people don't give a rat's about the American public, because they are transnational. It just goes on and on. And to see the U.S. government do what they're doing, I'm fearful.
I am as well.
Take care.
Thanks, Sandra. Good to hear
Bye.
From you. She's right. It's who can understand some of the people that voted to stop the immunity? Who can understand some of the Democratic senators that went over on the other side? How can it be? How can it be that many of them went over to the other side? Why? Like I said, I understand the selfishness of some of them wanting to get reelected if they happen to be in Nelson, for example, here in Florida, the Democrat, faux Democrat, just wants to make sure that he ingratiates himself to the Republicans here that helped put him in office. He doesn't like it that I say that, but it's true. It is true. But that's how it is. But some of the other ones that are not in areas like that, and I'm not defending him, don't get me wrong. I think it's despicable to do that. But if you're in an area where you don't have to protect your seat, it's even more despicable. That shows me that you're just a bad person. That's all there is to it. It shows me you don't have any morals. You don't have the morals that you ought to have to be in the United States Senate. That's what it shows me. And I am so tired of Harry Reid getting up and pontificating. He's going to do this and he's going to do that. And I heard Jonathan Turley. You all know Jonathan Turley, and I do know Jonathan Turley, professor of law at George Washington University. What a beautiful campus they have there in D.C. Anyway, he commented on it last night. And he said, you know, it's not just the Republicans. In case you notice, there's more than 31 Democrats in the Senate, but only 31 people voted against the immunity provision. The fix, and this is what Turley said, and he knows Washington well. The fix has been in for some time on the unlawful surveillance program and the torture program. Jonathan Turley went on to say many Democrats and Republicans were aware of the program, and they are actively helping the White House to try and shut down any confrontation on the issue. And this is also helped by the fact that the telecoms are one of the five most, and I think this is a key to the whole thing, and what Sandra was alluding to, that it, sooner or later it gets down to money, that telecoms are one of the five most powerful lobbying forces in Washington. And many of these members have close ties to those lobbyists, so says Jonathan Turley. And he's right, they do. And he went on, Jonathan did, to Professor Turley, to single out Hillary Clinton. And I completely agree with, I like Hillary Clinton, you know I do. But he singles out Hillary Clinton for her cowardly refusal to participate in the vote. It's not like she wasn't around, because she was. And Turley went on to say it's going to get harder to get this cat to walk backwards once you grant immunity. He's so right. The question about the next president is a good one. But you'll note that in the vote on immunity, Hillary Clinton didn't even show up to vote. She was in the area campaigning. As you well know, I will defend Hillary Clinton when she needs defending. And something like this, if I don't like it, I'll say so. And this was a cowardly act, in my opinion. Jonathan Turley went on to say her opponents, McCain and Obama, showed up. But it really, I think, is symbolic of the disconnect between here you've got someone who is campaigning for the President of the United States making pitches of civil libertarians, but doesn't even show up when she's in the neighborhood to vote against telecom immunity. And Professor Turley went on to say, I'm not just dumping on her. The fact is that there's been a lot of really duplicitous work being done by both parties to shield what has been a very fixed deal from the very beginning on telecoms. The rest is just a rehash of what you already know. Reed needs to go, and that should be the first order of business after the election, in my opinion. I do most definitely believe that. I look back in history. I have looked back in history for quite some period of time. I cannot see a period of time in the Democratic Party when we've had a more weak and ineffectual leader as Harry Reid. I wondered at the time when he got elected to that position by his peers. I was suspect of it. I never understood it. I still don't. I don't know how Harry Reid ever amassed the power that he did to get into that position, and I've looked at it closely, but he has to go. If the Democrats are going to do good for America, not just the party, but first and foremost for America, we need a strong Senate majority leader. We will hold the majority. We will increase the majority, no doubt. The Republicans are having to defend 23 seats, I think it is. We will gain a few. Many of those 23 are absolutely safe, but we may gain two, we may gain three, even up to five, a lot of people think. We won't get to 60. That's for sure. We will not get to 60. But if we gain a little bit of power and get away from that close split on the votes where Joe Lieberman doesn't mean anything anymore, we need a strong leader. And I say we, I mean Democrats. And Harry Reid is not that leader. Nice guy. Absolutely. Nice fella. You would like Harry Reid. You meet him in person. He's a good guy. But not even close to being the kind of leader you need to be the Senate Majority Leader of the United States Senate. Not even in the ballpark. Well, here we are coming down at the end of the first hour already. My gosh, where does the hour go? And don't forget, we've got Representative Adam Smith. He chairs the Terrorism Subcommittee on the Armed Services Committee. He's going to be coming up not too long after the top of the hour, so you'll want to take heed of that. He will be with us somewhere around 10 minutes after the hour, so that won't be too long after the news. We'll go to the news, come back, take a short break, and have Congressman Adam Smith with us to talk about Iraq today. That should be interesting, what he knows a plenty about it. We're going to pause for the news. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone. We'll be back right after the news.
by the International News Net.
A British parliamentary inquiry has concluded that doctors are unwittingly fueling the growing number of Britons hooked on prescription drugs by giving patients doses of medicines that can prove highly addictive. Deforestation in Brazil's Amazon rainforest declined over the past 3 years. Brazil expanded the area of protected rainforest by 60% while allowing controlled logging. The government said it's a crackdown on the illegal clearing that's consumed one-fifth of the rainforest. In a key victory for the White House, the Senate Tuesday approved a sweeping measure that would expand the government's clandestine surveillance powers. Telecom companies that cooperated with intelligence agencies in domestic spying after 9/11 were given immunity from lawsuits.
Top of the hour news brought to you by INN World Report.
Cuba has demanded the U.S. return Guantanamo to the island nation and denounced the War on Terror prison where six detainees could face the death penalty for the 9/11 attacks. Cuba's Foreign Minister Felipe Perez Roque said Thursday that suspects held at Guantanamo have been subjected to torture and face unfair legal treatment. Perez Roque said Cuba rejects the violation of human rights, unjust incarceration of prisoners held without charges, and their appearance in courts in which they are convicted in advance. Perez Roque said, "We demand again the closure of the indecent Guantanamo prison, the return of the territory illegally occupied in our fatherland." The U.S., which has occupied Guantanamo for more than 100 years, signed a 1934 lease with Cuba that cannot be altered without agreement by both countries. Since 1960, Fidel Castro's government has refused the annual lease of $5,000 from the U.S. A British court Wednesday overturned the convictions of five Muslims who downloaded militant literature on their computers. The Court of Appeal judge said that while the downloaded data was certainly of an extreme nature, there was no evidence to suggest the defendants were planning to carry out acts of terrorism. The five had been sentenced to 2 to 3 years in prison by a lower court under a controversial section of the 2000 Terrorism Act that defense lawyers said was intended to apply to individuals who download instructions on bomb making. Critics of the law referred to it as a thought crime measure and predicted Wednesday's appeals court ruling would have a significant effect on how terrorism suspects are tracked down and arrested.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation!
This was fun.
You're
going
to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
This heart I bring you, I have but one heart to share with you. I have but one dream that I can cling. I pray comes true. My darling, until I saw you, I never felt this way, and nobody else before you ever has heard me say you are my one love. My life I live for you. I have but one heart to give to you.
The incomparable Dean Martin. Yes, for everybody on Valentine's Day today. How you doing? You having a good Valentine's Day today? I certainly hope you are. And we invite you to join us here on the show, here on the Guy James Show. We've got an interview coming up in just a couple of minutes, if everything goes well in the House of Representatives. We'll talk to Representative Adam Smith from the state of Washington. He's going to tell us about Iraq. Who knows? We might get to ask him a question about what went on in the House this afternoon, too. The great big walkout. Interesting situation there. Very, very interesting situation. In fact, let's just go over there right now. And I think we've got our call coming in from, yes, that call is from Washington. Let's just head over there right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, sorry. I'm going to connect Congressman Smith to you now.
Okay, very good. Thank you. We're waiting for Congressman Smith to come on the line. Excellent timing.
Hello?
Yes.
Congressman Adam Smith, how are you?
Hi, Congressman Smith, and thank you very much for coming on the program this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the chance.
Interesting day in the House of Representatives.
It was, yes. more theater than reality, but yes, it was.
Did they come back?
They walked out and then they came back, which to my mind is kind of weak.
Yeah.
If you're gonna walk out, you got to walk out.
That's right.
You just walk out, turn around, and come back.
Just walk out and had a drink and came back. I didn't. The show's been on since they walked out, so we didn't get a chance to see if they came back or not.
Yeah, I did.
The reason we asked you to come on today, I know you're the chair of the terrorism subcommittee on the Armed Services Committee, and we wanted to, we depend on so many times the media to let us know what is happening in Iraq, if the surge is being successful, and I'm not sure we always get the straight story. Are we successful with the surge right now, and have we been successful in curbing terrorism?
Well, I wouldn't say we're successful in the surge in any, long-term meaningful sense. In the short term, in Baghdad, in some areas, violence has gone down without question. And I think, that beefed up U.S. military presence has helped reduce the short-term violence, though we are seeing it creep back up in Baghdad, in Mosul, in a lot of surrounding neighborhoods. And the biggest problem with the surge is it just increases Iraqi dependence on a foreign occupying force that their people do not support and forestalls any sort of more permanent security solution. We're buying time, but for nothing, but not in any meaningful way. It's not like after this passage of time, we're in a better position to resolve the broader issues. And in terms of how it, fights the broader, what we call the war on terror, I prefer to think of it as, an ideological battle against al-Qaeda and their violent totalitarian ideology, which they've spread in a variety of places. As far as that goes, that battle is actually being fought in many, many other countries, and Iraq is not centrally about that. Iraq is centrally about filling the power vacuum left by Saddam Hussein. So we've got 160,000 U.S. troops, fighting in that power vacuum. What's that do to the broader effort to defeat the ideology of al-Qaeda? It hampers it in many ways.
Are we getting anything done politically there? Is the vacuum being filled?
The vacuum's being filled in a variety of ways, many of which are not particularly helpful to us. I mean, you look at particularly down in the Shia South, there's no risk of al-Qaeda or the broader, sort of terrorism that threatens us here in the U.S. or in the West, but what's being put in place there is an extremist ideology. And you hear stories of, women not wearing veils being stoned in various cities down there. Yes, there's a group filling that power vacuum. I don't know how much that's in our interests, but it is happening. Basically, neighborhood to neighborhood, city to city, the central government in Iraq does not have much real authority anywhere in the country. It's just basically that the local tribes are assuming a measure of control and sort of meandering towards some kind of coexistence with that central government.
And if we leave?
If we leave, I think in the short term there'll be, greater challenges. But that's true if we left, now, or if we left 6 months from now, or 6 years from now, or 12 years from now. We are forestalling the inevitable and not, to my mind, improving the situation. There has to be some kind of transition to a structure of government, whether it's local or central, that is supported by the Iraqi people. And having 160,000 U.S. troops occupying does not move them any further down the line towards that. Nor do I accept the idea that if we leave, al-Qaeda takes over. Al-Qaeda is in a very weak position in Iraq. Frankly, it would be a Shia-Sunni battle and then many subgroups within those tribes. How it would come out, I couldn't say. Whether or not it would come out in a way advantageous to the U.S. is an even more difficult guess. But we are not in a military position to force that advantageous outcome, and that's what I think the president misunderstands. Remember he famously said, "We will win unless we leave." Not a very helpful statement, and one that I'm increasingly afraid that he believes a little bit too strongly.
Yes. Yes, I agree with you. I think he does believe that strongly. Realistically, has there been a study? Has your committee Do you understand what kind of a time frame we may be looking at here to get some stability in that government so that we can leave and not have the what you say is the inevitable happen?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've looked at it, but nobody really has the answer to that because it's hard to say as long as we're there and we are such an overriding presence, an occupying force in that country, that it's really very difficult to say what would happen. What I do know is that it is costing us severely in terms of our military, you know, the impact on our troops, on our ability to recruit and retain, our ability to have adequate readiness for our military. And we have to ask ourselves the question whether or not maintaining that presence is more helpful than harmful. And I don't believe it is. That's why I, you know, supported a timeline last year, actually supported it before that, but had an opportunity to vote for it last year, and still think that we need to move into a steady drawdown. Now, it can't happen overnight. I don't agree with these people who say we can get everybody out in 60 days or 30 days or whatever. You know, but as long as we have the president's plan, which is, you know, maintain, I think what he said now is, nope, we got to keep 130,000 troops through to the end of next year. We aren't helping the situation in Iraq, and we are simply further exhausting our own resources.
What is the real story on the suspension of the drawdown? We're going to take it back down to 130. I've seen where some statements by Iraqi officials saying, no, let's keep the drawdown going. What is the story there?
Well, the story is that the president and the Secretary of Defense and General Petraeus, who's still the commander in Iraq, have decided that they want to maintain that 130,000 troop presence beyond next summer and push back the point at which we even begin to examine a further drawdown. Now, I'm sure there's many in Iraq who long for the day when this occupying force is gone, who may be offering up a different argument. But right now, the U.S. government, you know, the president who has control over this, has decided they're staying. So that is the policy.
Is it advantageous for the politicians in Iraq, those who want us to leave and those that don't want us to leave, which one of them has the advantage in forming some sort of a decent, stable government?
It's hard to say. I mean, and it's more of a mix than that. You know, I think there are, I mean, they see both the advantages of having us there and the disadvantages. I think one of the biggest challenges right now is that the Maliki government has so little credibility outside of the Shia. The Sunnis don't trust it. They have seen it as being a government that's primarily interested in protecting the Shia, and therefore the central government's credibility is severely strained. But I think the president also, in advocating for this, presents a false choice, that basically either it's the Maliki government or it's Osama bin Laden running Iraq. And the insurgent groups have many, many different interests, only a tiny fraction of which have chosen to align themselves with al-Qaeda's ideology. So I think we have to understand the complexity of the different groups battling for power over there and not see this as, you know, either we have the group that supports the U.S. or we have the group that supports bin Laden. That is clearly not the choice.
I know you're pressed for time today, and I'd like to ask you a question that you could take the rest of the afternoon to answer, and evening, I'm sure. But being on the Terrorism Subcommittee on the Armed Services Committee domestically, are we safe?
Well, I think, no, we are still threatened, without question. I mean, Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda's central leadership structure, we believe, in northwest Pakistan, is still extant. They are still plotting and planning. They would still love to, you know, follow up the 9/11 attacks with another attack. We've seen attacks on Western targets, some that have been carried out, some that have been thwarted, in Great Britain, in Spain, places in Indonesia, a variety of different other attacks. So there is still, you know, the ideology that bin Laden and Zawahiri gave birth to, that, you know, they must strike against any Western target anytime they can. They have not given up on that, nor have they lost their capabilities. So that threat is still out there, and we still have to figure out an intelligent way to meet it.
And how do you answer those who say, particularly in this political season, well, the president's done a great job of protecting us. We haven't had any attacks since 9/11.
Well, you know, I don't think that's the end of the story. I will say this. I think in some ways the president, you know, has done a good job of targeting, you know, al-Qaeda leadership and aggressively going after them, of, you know, being very aggressive about protecting this country. But what he hasn't done such a good job on is winning the broader ideological battle. So while we're stopping the short-term attacks, Al-Qaeda's recruitment has gone through the ceiling, and every intelligence estimate I see says that they actually have more followers and have grown in strength and popularity since 9/11, which means we're in essence sort of on a treadmill here of trying to stop these attacks continuously, when we'd be better served to figure out a way to comprehensively defeat the ideology. And that has a lot more to do with development and diplomacy and, you know, getting our message out there and defeating their message than it does with just pure military action. So, you know, certainly it's a positive mark that we have not been attacked. But on the other hand, there have been a large number of attacks on Western targets, not in the U.S. And you look at, you know, the destabilized government in Iraq, the destabilized government in Pakistan, the worsening situation in Afghanistan. And you look at places like Indonesia and Bangladesh, where extremist madrasas are growing in number and spreading their ideology, and you clearly see that we've got a long way to go in terms of defeating this ideology, which is what will be necessary to get us to the point where we can say we're safe.
What's the number one thing we can do to defeat the ideology?
Well, I think, gosh, I don't know that there is a number one thing to do, but I would, the way I would put it is I would sort of, you know, buy into a little bit Thomas Friedman's language about, you know, the, how does he put it? There's a poverty of dignity in too much of the Muslim world. We need to work to help create governments that provide for their people. You know, Al-Qaeda lost a lot of their mojo in Aceh and other parts of Indonesia after the tsunami because it was the West that showed up and helped people.
Yes.
You know, people looked around and said, hey, they fed us, they clothed us, they took care of us. You know, that's better than these guys who just want to blow people up. So I think we have to show that, you know, our ideas can provide for people's day-to-day needs. And that's a comprehensive thing that we have to do in a bunch of different places. Now, in the middle of all that, we certainly also have to target those who have declared war on us and would do harm to us. But if that's all we do, then we will be doing this forever, and we will never truly succeed.
Well, that's I certainly agree. Representative Smith, I want to thank you so much for being on the program and sharing your information with us today.
Anytime. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's important that the public hear the truth about all this, and I thank you for what you're doing. I thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Representative Adam Smith of Washington, he's the chair of the Terrorism Subcommittee on the Armed Services Committee. There's much to be done to defeat the ideology. There's much to be done in Iraq. There's much to be done on this whole front, and I'm not so sure we're getting it done. We're certainly not doing anything to defeat the ideology right now. This administration isn't. They see everything that there is to be done at the point of a gun, I'm afraid, and that's not the way to do it, in my humble opinion. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Please give us a call. We'll be back in just a minute.
the sky. I know this love of mine will never die, and I love her.
Comes to Rick's.
If he can stand it, I can. Play it.
Howdy, Rangers. Tune into Rick's Place. You'll be fascinated with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner's take on all of today's political issues from a real Texan's liberal point of view. So mosey on into Rick's Place for some good old hospitality with Rick Goodner. See you there, Rangers, this Saturday right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And if you want another kind of love,
miss Rick's Place with Rick Goodner, part of the weekend lineup on the Horn, running all weekend in rotation with the Showers Report and Night Sounds.
Hey, I do want to remind everybody I've got a special announcement. Now, you all listen carefully, okay? I don't very often ever say I've got a special announcement on the program, but I have a special announcement, and I do want all the Head On Radio Network folks to pay very close attention to what I have to say. And I want to let you know that right after my program, of course, Mark Levine will be on. We'll have his live show, and that's going to be the last live show for this evening on the Head On Radio Network. It seems the flu bug has just came marching through the Head On Radio Network studios, and the entire cast is suffering mightily with the flu. Bob is sick, and Agnes is sick. The whole family is sick with the flu, and so the Head On Radio Network studios will go dark after Mark's show this evening. Okay, so mark that down. You're going to have to make other plans. I can hear many of you lamenting the fact right now, oh Lord, what will I do? I hear that. And the emails are come flooding in right now. My God, what will we do? We are lost. I understand. I understand. But you can get through one evening some way. Somehow you will have to get through this evening. I know it'll be difficult. I know it's one of those things that you didn't want to face today, but you need to. So, anyway, not making light of the situation. The flu, ugh, terrible thing to have. And so do keep in mind that after Mark's show this evening, the studio is going to go dark for the rest of the evening. You'll make it. You'll make it. Call each other. Get on the chat room together. Hold hands. Do what you need to do to get through the evening. I know you can do it. I'm rooting for you. And do want to say get well to Bob and Agnes and the whole family. Miserable stuff, the flu. So there, that's the special announcement. How'd you like to be running for president right now? I had a friend tell me, I said, you know, that'd be a horrible job, I think. I really do. I think it'd be a horrible job. Everybody'd be on your case all the time, and you know, you got these life-threatening decisions going on, and it's just, you know, terrible. And so here you are, the person, the guy or the gal that's got to make these decisions, monumental decisions, probably every day, or else some people you appoint making monumental decisions every day, in Bush's case, or the vice president making all the decisions. And I'm not so sure I'd want to do that. But I told a friend that. I said, no, I wouldn't want to be president. So, oh, I would. I would love to be president. That way, I don't want to make these war decisions and that kind of stuff. I just want to be president so I can get front row seats at the Christmas gathering and the Kennedy Center functions and all that. That'd be the good part of it. You know, dressing up fancy for the dinners and the state dinners and all that. That would be, and we'll leave the rest of it to somebody else. Well, evidently, Bush has looked at it that way. He certainly has left decisions up to people like, maybe all the decisions, for all we know, up to Dick Cheney, as Tweety Bird likes to call him. But how would you like to be running for president right now? You stop and think about it. It'd be kind of like walking to a house that was just trashed by the Hell's Angels, a beer party or something. I mean, where do you start? First of all, you've got to be practical, and you've got to look at the real situation the way it really is. We're going to be in a recession. There isn't any doubt about that. The thing is, how wide and how deep is the recession going to be? And what do you do for that recession? Certainly this little Band-Aid that they're going to throw on it here in the next month or so. Well, you passed it already, I guess, signed it. Sending us all $300 or $600 or whatever that is, you know, that'll win your gas tank in 2 weeks and it'll all be over with. And if you're saying, hey, we still got a recession on our hands. So you've got that. And I don't know, you know, what to do to get out of that. And then there's the matter of our reputation being trashed by the neocons and Bush and, so we've got Obama or Clinton having to put America back in the good stead with the rest of the world. That's going to be a tough thing. And we're going to have to convince the rest of the world that we now think that torture is a crime and that it's not an excuse for some sort of paranoid sadomasochistic behavior of some kind. And then we've got to tell the Iraqis some way, somehow, you're going to have to get your act together. We're going to give this thing back to you sooner than later. Sooner, I hope. We got some treaties that Bush broke that have to be fixed. And then we've got health care, the massive, massive deficit. Vets care for the Iraq war veterans. Got to restore the Americans' faith in this country once again because a lot of people have lost it. It's going to be a tough road to hoe. There's no doubt about it. And we're going to have to get it done. And I'm not so sure I'd want that job of being the next president of the United States. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm glad I won't have it. See, the market closed down 175 points today. I don't know if that wipes out all the gains that have been made this week or not. I forget where we started out this week. And let's see here, what is gold trading at today? So that I can take that 40 pounds of gold I got. And I wish I had just a few ounces of gold. Gold today closed at 9.11. It's currently at 9.11, reached a high of 9.15 today, so still way up there. And in my opinion, it'll probably go higher yet. We shall see. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us on the program. Talk about a travesty. And I believe this is a terrible, terrible travesty. What were they thinking? This definitely goes under the what were they were thinking category. What were they thinking? Donald Rumsfeld. He's evidently been in hiding someplace, I don't know where, but he's going to be honored for public service. Donald Rumsfeld. On February 23rd, the University Club in Washington, D.C., will be giving former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, who just became a member in November, how convenient, they're going to be giving him its highly coveted William Howard Taft Public Service Award, better known as the WHTPSA. The event, which sold out within 48 hours of the first announcement, will also feature Tony Snow and his band, which is called Beats Workin'. Now, that sounds like quite a soiree to me. Tony Snow's band, called Beats Workin', to honor Donald Rumsfeld. I don't know how many of you remember, but and back in 2003, Charles Pierce wrote in the Boston Globe of the various social organizations talking about Washington, D.C., he said, there's an old Washington joke about various clubs around town. And he mentioned about this university club here. He said, at the university club, you need money and no brains. And at the Cosmos Club, you need brains and no money. And at the Metropolitan Club, you don't need either one. I don't know if you need either one for that deal right there. The University Club honoring Donald Rumsfeld. I must tell you, I would love to be at that little dinner. I really would. I found it very odd yesterday. We were talking earlier in the program today about the, for lack of a better term, steroid hearings yesterday of Henry Waxman. I did find it odd, and I'm sure some of you did as well, that this seemed to be kind of split down party lines, either for or against Clemens. And I want to thank Stuart for sending me this. It explains the whole thing, why it was split down party lines. It's from an old USA Today article. And let me quote it. It says, the respect Clemens commands goes well beyond the baseball world. He hangs out with George Bush and his wife Barbara, even building a horseshoe pit at his home for the former president. He has a standing invitation to dine at the White House, end quote. Now we know why it was split down party lines yesterday. I did find that odd. I really did. And, to nobody's surprise, I don't think, 97%, and let me explain a little background, at Princeton yesterday, New York Times UN correspondent Warren Hoge revealed that at Princeton University, 33 ambassadors got together on former UN ambassador John Bolton's performance, and all but one felt he had undermined UN reform efforts. When Bush appointed Bolton in 2005, UN members viewed the move as a stick in the eye, and evidently the ambassadors, 33 ambassadors, all but one felt that Bolton evidently was bad for that job. And didn't we know that? Didn't everybody in the entire world know that? And Bush knew it as well, or Cheney, whoever appointed him for sure. And I have found it odd that no matter how bad the economic news gets, and we'll talk a little more about that in just a few minutes, but no matter how bad it gets, the Bush administration keeps coming out and letting us know that, no, things are fine, really. The economy is robust, it's strong, and it's not near as bad as you think it is, and all that. The administration is shutting down the governmental website that tracks U.S. economic indicators. The U.S. economy is faltering. Family debt is on the rise. Benefits are disappearing. The deficit is going nuts. And the mortgage crisis has gotten infinitely worse. And conservatives have attempted to deflect attention from the crisis by blaming the media, naturally. We're starting to hear that every day. Well, the media is causing this recession. Yeah. And they've been insisting that the United States is not headed toward a recession, despite what the economists are saying and what they're predicting. And the Bush administration's latest move is to simply hide the data. Forbes has awarded economicindicators.gov one of its best of the web awards. This is a great website, economicindicators.gov, and given one of the best of the web awards by Forbes. And they've explained that the government site provides an invaluable service to the public for accessing U.S. economic data. The site is maintained by the Economics and Statistics Administration and combines data collected by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, like GDP and net imports and exports, and the Census Bureau, like retail sales and durable goods shipments. The site simply links to the relevant department's website. This might not seem like a big deal, but doing it yourself, say, trying to find, if you're out there trying to find this data, you can't. And so it's been on the economicindicators.gov site for all to see. Now the Bush administration has decided to shut down this site because of budgetary constraints, effective March 1st. Now how convenient. The one place where Joe Citizen can go and find out all the things he needs to know himself on the economy, we're shutting it down, Bush is, because of budgetary constraints. How much does it cost to run this site? I would submit to you, probably not that much. But all of a sudden, we can't afford it. We can have a $3.1 trillion budget. We can pump up the military spending more. We can spend, a couple billion dollars a week in Iraq. We can do all that. But we can't have a website so the American public can see what's happening to our economy. No. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a minute.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. Well, I have not been in the news much this week, but rest assured I'm working hard doing the people's business. I signed a military appropriations bill recently and improved on the work of our lawmakers with my signing statement. With a signing statement, a president... Well, here's how a signing statement works. I take the bill, and I cross out a few things that I don't like in it. And I add a couple of things that I think ought to be in there. Anything I want. It's that simple. Now, the critiquers will say that the president can't do that. That this power is not outlined in our Constitution. Well, it is now. I just take the Constitution, I cross out a few things I don't like, this part, that part, and then number 8, that's not good. And then I just add a couple of things here that maybe the framers forgot. And there, it's all fixed. In fact, as long as I'm writing things on here, I heard a really funny limerick joke the other day. I'm going to just etch that in the margin so that all future presidents can read this document in the future and get a good laugh.
This is not America.
I'm going to call the Guy James Show today and say your piece. You better do it pretty quick. We only got about 12 and a half minutes left in the program today. And once again, I do want to remind all of our loyal Head On Radio Network listeners, and maybe some of you that aren't even loyal, I don't know. I want to let you know that after this show, of course, Mark Levine will be on with his great program. And after that, studios will go dark for this evening. The Head On Radio Network studios have been viciously attacked by the flu. It's an epidemic. So the studios will go dark and try and let everybody recuperate this evening, get a night's rest, and come back feistier than ever tomorrow. So mark that down. Don't forget that Bob will not be on tonight. The studios are going to go dark, and they're going to let everybody get some rest from this flu right after Mark Levine's show, and I'm sure Mark will remind you if you forget. Hey, here's a good idea. Here's a good idea. You know, I mentioned earlier on in the program today, why don't we just give everybody immunity, all the corporations? Well, I think the folks down at the Pentagon already heard that. They want more contractor immunity in Iraq. Why does that not surprise me? As the Bush administration prepares to renegotiate a long-term bilateral security agreement with Iraq, a deal-breaker for the Iraqis is contractor immunity of the type that allowed Blackwater guards to escape punishment after killing 17 Iraqis in a Baghdad shootout. Well, now why in the world would the Iraqis not like that? We have a renegade group of Blackwater security guards murder 17 Iraqis in the streets of Baghdad, and our people can't understand why the Iraqis are upset. But in interagency discussions arranged in preparation for the start of negotiations, the Department of Defense has said it wants to ask the Iraqis to maintain status quo. The State Department has argued strongly against that position. Why does that not surprise me? As long as we're passing out immunity, I can't imagine how I would feel, I think I know, if I were an Iraqi. Imagine this. Just imagine this. We've got an occupying army in our country. supposedly here to help us. And in your town, I don't know where you live, let's say, oh, Dayton, Wyoming, or Monkey Junction, North Carolina, or someplace. They just come into town, some of the security forces do, and some people that the army, occupying army, has hired to protect big shots. And they just come into your town square and start shooting the place up and kill 17 of your citizens and walk out and go, you can't touch me. I have immunity from the American government. How would it make you feel? And they wonder why there's an insurgency. They wonder why some of the folks over there hate America. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wonder very long when you know of a situation like that and you know what we did about it. Nothing. That's why I'm so incensed about that damn baseball hearing yesterday. Of all the things that need looked into and need to have something done, they wasted their time having a little political theater yesterday. Really, really an ugly, ugly scene, I thought. Very ugly. How are you sitting with your mortgage? Are you okay? A lot of people aren't. We are in a mortgage crisis right now here in the country, and to my surprise, I'm hunting around the national news today, and I run across a big article in the MSN News about the area where we broadcast this show from, Lee County, Florida. Fort Myers, Cape Coral, Naples area. Naples, not so much. But an ungodly number of foreclosures. Huge, huge. 1,833 foreclosures last month. Imagine that. 1,833. I've mentioned before, I don't know how the I don't know how the authorities, the sheriff's department, has the time to go out and serve papers on that many people. I really don't. But 1,833 in a month, and it hasn't showed any signs of letting up. Imagine that. I don't know if it was in that article or not, where somebody actually made the suggestion, and I laughed, and then I got to thinking about it, and I thought, well, maybe that isn't so weird after all. Guy actually suggested in here, and I thought he was a nutcase at first until I thought about it a little further. He said they ought to just, the banks, they ought to just dump all those properties at 10 cents on the dollar and get it over with. And if they did, the scavengers, the sharks, the vultures would all swoop down and buy all that stuff on 10 cents the dollar, and we could get back to business again. Because in this particular area, I think we've got a 44-month inventory of places for sale. So maybe there's some merit to what he said. Take 10 cents on the dollar, get it over with, and everybody. And you know, a lot of people are saying, well, this doesn't. I mean, I feel bad for the people that are losing their homes. I feel bad because of these foreclosures. Sooner or later, my friend, it's going to affect you. Maybe not all of you, but it's going to affect you. You live in a nice community. Someone four or five houses down from you has a hard time, can't pay the mortgage. They've got that, you know, it's cycled upwards on the adjustable rate mortgage. It's going up. They can't afford it anymore. They have to give up their home. There it sits empty, foreclosed. And then a couple more on your street, and a couple more on your street. Next thing you know, you've got a bunch of foreclosures looking you in the face, and you're still making your house payments okay. But what's that doing to your home's value? Your home's value. It's flushing it. So don't let everybody sit back and feel all fat and happy if we're not having any trouble, because sooner or later this thing's going to snowball and it's going to affect everybody. It's affecting me. It's affecting people where I live. I know many people it's affecting. So it's... And it's mentioned, Yellow mentioned on the chat room right now. The city there is talking about raising city sales tax because they're broke. It's going to get to you one way or another, whether it's your house, your the price of your taxes, devaluation of your home. It's going to get to you. So don't think that you're immune. And that's what really surprises me and offends me tremendously when I see so many people saying, hey, I'm pulling myself up by my bootstraps and I'm, you know, go get a job like I did and get yourself educated like I did. Okay, fine. Well, good. Everybody ought to do that. That's for sure. But don't think that you're going to be immune because you are not. Unless you're filthy rich. And it so happens that not too many miles from where I live, people are filthy rich, and it won't get to some of them. Oh, it may hurt their portfolio a little or something, but they'll be still worth tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, so that won't bother them. But the average Joe that lives in average town USA is going to get hurt. And you're going to get hurt indirectly. If it doesn't affect you directly, you'll get it indirect. In the way of taxes, in the way of devaluation, your prices of everything is going up. Not a nice situation. One out of every 14 mortgages are delinquent at the end of September. One out of every 14. Imagine that. A little over 7%. What is that? 7 1/8? Whatever. That's a 30-year high. The highest foreclosures have been in 30 years in this country. I don't ever remember in my lifetime foreclosures being a huge problem. See, 30 years ago, that'd be 1978. I can't even remember in 78 we had that kind of foreclosure problem. I do not. But according to the Federal Reserve, another 2 million families could face foreclosure in the next 2 years. And here we have this little 30-day Band-Aid that they tried to throw on it the other day, and it's absurd. 30 days, going to give you 30 more days if you're 90 days past due already. Going to give you 30 more days while the bank evaluates whether you're eligible to modify the loan on better terms. And the bad thing is that all these little plans that they've come up with so far, the banks really haven't acted in good faith in many cases on this. So I don't know what's going to happen. I wish I did. There's much, much, much more to this story. But it's going to be a huge market adjustment. I just don't know where it's going to end up. I know where it's ending up for people I know in my neighborhood and some of your neighborhoods. You've written and let me know. Many people are getting to be retirement age and planned on their home being their little nest egg, maybe downsizing, selling the home, moving someplace else more affordable. Now they find they can't even sell their home at any price. That's how it is in this neck of the woods. In many cases, you can't sell a home at any price. So, tough situation. Once again, don't forget, after Mark's show, the Head On Radio Network will go dark tonight so everybody can get recuperated from that nasty flu. Bob and Agnes, get well, please. You have our best wishes on that. Everybody stay away from Bob and Agnes. Thanks for joining us today here on the Guy James Show. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.